Before we get going, there's a small matter of the photo I put up from our lovely weekend and the walk we did in the woods with the girls. I took a photo, not of all the four of us, just you and me, and put it on Facebook. Facebook has a new button underneath it. It's like this meta AI thing, I don't know. Anyway, it says that you can find out more about this couple's friendship by pressing this.
Really?
Yeah, find out more about their relationship. So people have been pressing it and sending us in. So here's what Meta AI says about us.
Yeah.
The couple in the photo appears to be in a loving relationship, likely a long-term partnership or marriage, given their age and affectionate demeanour. The fact that they're taking a selfie together in a serene forest setting suggests they value shared experiences and capturing memories. Their body language and facial expressions convey warmth and comfort around each other. But here's the thing, Nick, and you're going to love this. It doesn't produce the same set of results for every person. So in another one, it says the couple in the photo appears to be a senior pair, likely in their golden years, enjoying quality time together. Given the context of the post, which mentions a lovely weekend together and lots to talk about, it seems they're prioritising their relationship and making the most of their time together. And others have written suggesting this is evidence that we are, in fact, Reverend and Mrs. Davis.
Well, I didn't think there was anything that could make me loathe AI more. And then along comes this.
I knew this would anger you.
I'm so angry now, I have to stop the podcast. Welcome, everybody, to episode 335 of the Mid-Faith Crisis Podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there on a screen is the person with whom I have a long-term partnership, apparently.
Yes.
And a loving relationship. It's all true, I suppose, but maybe not in the way that they said. It's Joe Davis.
Hello, everyone. Not as grumpy as Nick is, it has to be said, but that's fairly standard fare, isn't it?
Well, I don't know why I was grumpy starting the podcast, but I'm certainly grumpy now. Gold, likely in their golden years. I mean, who needs this button?
I don't know.
What does it do? Why would you press it?
I don't know. Let's ask a young person. Hey, any young people, why would you press that button?
I don't think young people are pressing the button.
Nick's confused.
You're already, I mean, how stupid have you got to be to want to have AI describe a photo to you? Really? Just look at it, for heaven's sake.
And draw your own conclusions about our relationship.
Yeah, well, don't, actually. But anyway.
Anyway, other than that.
Oh, listen, I'm very annoyed. I'll come back to AI later on. I don't want to, you know, when I've had time to calm down. Actually, it probably won't calm down, but I'll still come back to it later on.
Are there any matters arising?
I don't know. Let's ask AI, shall we?
Shall we? Well, yeah. The home group's been a roaring success that we promised at the start of the year. Record attendance, lots of people coming, very popular with the listeners.
I don't think we promised it. Well, I certainly didn't promise
it. Well, you didn't promise it, but you know how you need me to make statements publicly in order for them to happen.
Hang on. The couple in this podcast appear to be a senior pair, likely in our golden years. We're enjoying quality time together. I don't think that's the case at all at the moment.
I don't think it's ever been the case. Anyway, yeah, stay tuned for news on the home group.
Yeah, or not. Anyway, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Good.
I spent time with another Nick.
Oh, you see.
Beloved listener. Yeah. Right. What would AI make of that?
Yeah, betraying this golden relationship.
It's been hot. I've been loving, been grateful to live by the sea and to be dipping into that. I think you're pretty much up to date. Oh, there's a meme doing the rounds. And I've seen it several times and I like it so much. I thought I'd just mention it here. This is a bit of common sense. I don't know whether it was written by Nikki Barber, who is credited for it, or whether AI wrote it, but I rather like it. And it says this: you can support Gaza without supporting Hamas, criticize Israel without being anti-Semitic, grieve for Iran without endorsing extremism, feel for innocent Israelis without backing the Israeli state. Empathy isn't allegiance, it's humanity. These possessions aren't binary or mutually exclusive. You can hold complexity, conscience and compassion all at once. Well, I think that's rather well said. Thank you, Nikki Barber, assuming it was you who wrote that, because we can't believe anything we read on the internet nowadays. But I thought that was, it's just nice to hear something that is common sense.
Well, yes, I think, do you remember the time when there was going to be a service? I think it was during the Argentinian War or after the Argentinian War. The Falkland Islands conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Archbishop of Canterbury, the then Archbishop of Canterbury, I think it was Runcie,
yeah.
Wanted to include prayers for Argentinian widows as well.
Yeah, good
and
man.
And was stopped by the government
doing it. Oh.
And this sort of polarisation, this idea that, you know, only one side is right, or by expressing an opinion about compassion that you're somehow endorsing.
Yes.
All the evil stuff.
Yes.
It's an all or nothing approach. Yeah, it's entirely wrong. As you say, who knows if Nikki Barber is a person, but if you are a person, well done, Nikki Barber.
Exactly. Anyway, to answer your question, I'm fine.
Oh, good.
Work is quiet, so I'm not stressed, and that's lovely.
Oh, lovely. Mm. Great.
How about you, dear friend?
Well, I tell you what, I'm enjoying butterflies.
Oh, yes.
So here's the thing. When we went on our lovely couple's long-term relationship, golden years, a senior moment, walk in the woods.
Yes.
I didn't realise that along with being a superb bird spotter, albeit one who can't tell a crow from a raven, but we'll leave
that.
Well,
stop that. Because I...
No, you couldn't. It was wrong. Anyway, you're a superb bird watcher, bird spotter. But you're also a master butterfly identifier.
Well, I do like my butterflies. Who doesn't?
And that was amazing what we saw in the
world.
And ever since then, I've tried to keep a record of the ones in the garden.
Great.
You know, I've seen them in graveyards. And yeah, I'm really enjoying it. So that's nice.
They are wonderful creatures.
Yeah.
And of course, there's so few of them relative to when we were kids. I mean, now we're in our senior years.
Mm.
You used to see about 100 butterflies for every one we see now. So even more reason to appreciate them, I think. Yeah.
Yes. And moths. You used to see a lot of moths,
Oh, yeah.
Especially on your windscreen driving at night.
That is true. Snowstorm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying that. Martha and I, my daughter and I, have just finished watching Andor, which we enjoyed immensely.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've watched any of that.
No? What's that?
It's a Star Wars thing, but it's...
Okay.
It doesn't quite fit in a way within the Star Wars universe because it's actually quite serious and good.
Oh.
I've probably offended many, many people listeners now, haven't I?
Yeah, of course you have. At least 14.
But tonally, it seems totally different and it leads into Rogue One. Anyway, it's very good. Very good. It starts slowly, but it builds
okay.
And we enjoyed that a lot. Now, the Lions rugby team are playing and... there's a brilliant article on the BBC about the captain, Maro Itoje, and particularly his faith.
Okay.
When he's talking about his Christian faith and how important it is to him now. And he says I was probably a lukewarm Christian for a large part of my life. I was probably someone who went to church but not really living the principles or values of it that deeply. But I've always been a believer. And he says, the humility that I've tried to embody throughout my life definitely comes from knowing that everything I have has been a gift, not by my own doing, but by the guy upstairs. I'm a rugby player. I'm an athlete. But that's what I do. It's not who I am. Which I thought was, you know, it's really good stuff.
Yeah. Well done, you.
And he's an amazing guy. He supports an art gallery for African artists. He supports a foundation that is helping the poor in Nigeria, poor children in Nigeria. He's interested in politics. He's a great man.
Mm.
I'm a big fan. And he goes out on the rugby field and he absolutely thumps people. I mean,
right.
What's not to love?
Yes, it's
really.
Beautiful macho Christianity.
Yeah, indeed. No, really good.
Okay.
I thought it was a really good, positive article. And, good for him.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. I'm pretty good. As I say, I'm quite grumpy about AI at the moment, but I will come back to that later.
Okay, fine.
Because I still haven't calmed down enough.
No, I realise that. Okay, well, look, Why don't we get on with some feedback? We've got quite a lot. So let's just crack on and see how we go. First up from Helen, who says, "Hi, Nick and Joe. The Spirit of God is referenced numerous times in the Old Testament, but to my knowledge, Jewish theologians have never posited the idea of God as a duality. Why can't we be similarly relaxed? It is the identification of Jesus as God which seems to have caused the trouble. As a theological student, I was told I had invented my own heresy by proposing that Jesus was God but didn't exist before the incarnation, but was begotten at that point. I now accept that the mystery is deeper, as John 1 speaks of the pre-existent word being present at creation, and Paul likewise speaks of all things being created by and for Christ. God's relationship with creation and time in some way seems to be the deeper mystery." From Helen. So thank you, Helen. And well done for coming up with your own original heresy.
Well, I mean, everyone's a heretic. I'm not sure that's original, actually, Helen. I think somebody may have got there before you, but I can't remember the name of it for the life of me. I think it's one of the Gnostic ones. Anyway, well done. Everyone's a heretic, really, especially when you get to the Trinity. It becomes very sort of confusing, really.
But I thought you were going to say especially when you get to the golden years of your life.
That as well.
Okay, a different Helen wrote in and said, "Hi, Joe and Nick. Trying to keep this pithy. God the Father is God outside time, the Spirit, God inside time, and Jesus, God cutting through time. She says, I have an image of a ladder with God outside time and God inside time being the parallel poles and God through time being the rungs between them." I mean, Helen, what I like about that is that you're coming up with a new metaphor, and I think that's great. Good. I don't really have much to comment on other than that.
I like the fact there's another Helen. If we had another Helen, we could have a trinity of Helens commenting on the Trinity. So if your name's Helen, you've got something to say, yeah. Email in, please.
Good point. So you may remember last week that someone wrote in as saying that maybe the creed should be more like a poem, and you've questioned what kind of poem. Should it be a limerick? And then we issued this challenge to everyone. Why don't you write us a limerick about the Trinity?
Yeah.
And of course, our brilliant, brilliant listeners have done that. There's some up on our Facebook page. Sarah wrote in, emailed in and says, "There once was a God who was three. Well, that makes no sense to me. Three into one. How can it be done? One whole showing God in 3D. That's very, very strong, Sarah. And then Danny wrote in and says, "There once was a God who was three. A magnificent trinity. Attempts to describe do often divide and lead us towards heresy."
Absolutely brilliant. Yes.
These are good.
I mean, you need to send that to Helen, don't you, really, that one?
Really. Yeah, exactly. Andy said, "Hi, Joe and Nick. Here's my piece of pith. I'm one of the two brothers who are two of the 17. I was delighted to be referenced in your latest episode after you met my third brother, who you correctly deduced is not a listener." He says, "To our equal credit, Nick, we grew up in the centre of the universe, Watford, in the days of Graham Taylor, John Barnes and Elton John." He says, "As for the Trinity," he says, "I'd love to write a worship song called Come Floaty Thing." He says, "I'm a bit of a Richard Fluffy Raw fan, and like Joe, I'm currently quite panentheistic. The Buddhist, Tara Brach, uses the traditional greeting Namaste, which connotes the divine in me honours the divine in you, or I see, bow to the divine in you." I love that. He says, "I love this and equate it to seeing Jesus or the floaty thing in each other. Loving Christ, Andy." Yes.
Excellent.
Andy, I too love that greeting, Namaste, once I found out what it meant. What a lovely idea that the divine in me honours the divine in you, or I bow to the divine in you. What a beautiful greeting.
And isn't that really what happens in the best kind of sort of relationships and conversation anyway? Mm. It always feels like that. It feels like you're connecting with something special in each other. When you're working together on a project, or when you're creating stuff together, or stuff like that, it feels like there's something unique there. I think that's great. I think we ought to say, we had some complaints, or a complaint about, you know, the floaty thing being disrespectful.
Yeah.
We weren't saying that's what we call the Holy Spirit, or wanted to rebrand the Holy Spirit.
No.
It was really you were saying that's how people sort of conceive of it.
Yeah, that's my experience of how people understand it. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't suppose the Spirit is that worried about being, you know, called the floaty thing, but that's not really how we see that part of the Trinity.
Perhaps one of the harder parts of the Trinity to offend. Who can say who's the most touchy?
Because it's so floaty.
It's just a bit woo. Yeah, a bit, hey, relax, man.
Chill out.
Anyway, now we are getting into heresy. Corin wrote in and said, said this, they're on their holidays. Yesterday we visited a powerful waterfall. It was impossible to do so without getting wet from the spray. I don't know if this counts as pithy. It does. But I wondered whether a slightly improved analogy would be that God is the spring, Jesus the waterfall, and the Holy Spirit is the spray. Just a thought. Thanks for the prompt to think about this.
That's nice. That's like three substances in different, yes, slightly different forms. Yeah,
I do like it. I do like what I love is that people are thinking up new metaphors, yes, and ways, yes, to describe something, and I think they're perfectly at liberty to do that.
I think all that really matters is you get wet at the end of the day. You know, yeah, the key thing is plunge in. That's what I would say.
Dave wrote in the father, son and floaty thing. And said, Nick said, a problem with modalism is if it's always a mask, how do you know the real God? He says, but they aren't masks. They're facets of God. They are all real. When you say real God, you mean an understanding that is both non-fake and also complete. But what if you can't see a complete God without seeing all the many facets of God, and every facet is real? He says, as an aside, here's an example from physics, and I like this. He says, when scientists carefully observe light, in some situations it behaves as a wave, in some as a particle. So is light a wave or a particle or something else? The answer is yes. Yeah. Light is actually a wave and light is actually a particle, and most likely light is beyond that, especially since we currently don't understand how one thing can simultaneously be both a wave and a particle. It is a mystery. So the only issue I see with modalism is that without three distinct persons, it seems hard to have a being who fully understands relational capabilities like love. Good point. But there we are. And he goes on. There's lots of good stuff in that email. Dave, thank you for writing in. I do have some more comments to make about that, but I might save it till after the next one.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to comment on those?
Well, let me just pick up on a few technical things. I mean, firstly, look, we've managed to combine modalism, which is sort of a difficult enough thing to understand, with particle physics. So, you know, we're really going for the easy analogies this time, aren't we? I think I have quite a lot of sympathy with the sort of modalist idea, actually. It wasn't my problem, in a sense, with modalism. This was the classic sort of the problem, as it were, with modalism. And the reason was because the word that was used in that particular explanation back in the 4th century, I think, when it emerged, 5th century, was three personas. And that word comes from the Latin word persona, which was the mask that the actors wore.
Oh, okay. So the
metaphor was, in fact, masks, the mask. But I find it quite helpful to talk about three expressions of God, which might be just as modalist as anything else, actually. But anyway, thanks, Dave.
Okay, we're going to do one more on the Trinity before we move on. This is from Gary. He said, I love the discussion on the Trinity. Embracing this ambiguity in God talk seems to me to be inevitable for humans. He says, when I was younger, I was always on a search to find the correct verbal formulation of who God is and how God works. However, in each new church I joined on my search, the official correct view eventually became problematic for me. I really want and need to be a part of a church community, but it has become increasingly tricky. Seems to me you have two choices when you stay in a local church body. Either keep quiet about the cognitive dissonance or admit openly that you don't see the emperor's new clothes. Humans crave certainty and people don't like it when you say the king is naked. He says, then you are either branded as dangerous or pitied and people try to save you. Well, I think you have well articulated a conundrum that is common for a lot of people. He says, I try not to judge that impulse because I was that way too. Problem is, a lot of the people in churches who have it all together and sorted are also in need of saving. When we are that smug person, at least part of what we need saving from is the idea that God sees the world the same way we do. And ironically, I still have to fight the urge to save people from not having my new enlightened view of the divine. He says, keep up the great work, Gary. And Gary, under a separate email, wrote this limerick. He said, once my doctrine of God was pristine, then I found out that guy was a con. I thought he was a he, turns out she was a we, and like Joe, now I worship the lawn.
Thank you.
I don't know I worship the lawn, do I? I do like a nice lawn, though. He's right.
I haven't seen you worship the lawn. Gary, yes, fun. The rhyme scheme was a little bit dodgy, I felt, but thank you.
Yes, it was. But like in the tradition of good old hymn writers who try,
oh, that's true,
who try to rhyme love with prove and things like that. Yes. You know,
do you know what happens when I get to those? I always sing the rhyme.
Yes, I know. Yes. I do know that because I remember that very clearly.
It's one of my ways of entertaining myself during hymn singing is when they do a sort of slight rhyme like that. I always sing it. So I would sing love and then I would sing prove. Instead of proof. It's more fun.
I love that line in Gary's email about you're either branded as dangerous or pitted and people are trying to save you. And that's it. When you come up with a different view to the party line, that's kind of how it feels. So, yeah. Thank you.
So I think the interesting thing there is how do we respond to that? Gary seems to be responding in quite a mature way, really, and also recognising his own inclinations to try and save people. We all become evangelistic in our own way, don't we?
Yeah.
I think that the thing is to try and remember that a lot of the people who are trying to save you, as it were, they really are concerned about you, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. I mean, that's quite difficult as well because you feel fine.
Yeah,
you don't feel like you need.
I don't need saving, really.
No. But they really are concerned about you. They really are worried about you. I don't really know how you get over that except to keep talking to people. You must have experienced this, I suppose, when, you know, a few weeks ago we had that story you told about, you know, lovely guy but so messed up.
Yes, exactly. And that's because they need to believe that. They need that. That's what he was talking about, certainty. They need that certainty. So if someone comes in and seems to break the certainty, then either you view them as someone to be saved or you pity them. Yeah, lovely guy, but messed up. I get that and I understand that. And I think the only Christ-like response is to still love that person, not to be reactive and judgmental, because then I sort of feel you've lost the plot at that point.
Yes.
I think all you can do is love the way Christ loved people. He looked upon Jerusalem and wept. He wept. I always took that to mean he's weeping at the way the Pharisees have interpreted the scriptures and made it difficult for the vulnerable ones and the little ones to get into the kingdom of God. So, you know, I think that's what the weeping was about, how lost they were. But that's not to say he didn't love them, as well as being able to critique them.
And of course, his family tried to sort of stage an intervention.
Yeah.
As well, it's one of those little episodes in the Gospels that people don't really talk about very much. But his family come at one point, and the implication is they've come to try and stop him doing what he does because they think he's got lost.
Yeah, yeah.
which is pretty ironic, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Here's what I wanted to say about the Trinity and the doctrine of the Trinity. I've come to the conclusion I like it. I like it a lot. And the reason I like it a lot is because what's very obvious is the more you look into it, the less likely you are to understand it.
Okay.
And it's almost like, and I know this wouldn't be historically accurate. It's almost like people were thinking, now we've got the Christianity thing on the go. We really understand God. We've got it nailed. We've got it absolutely down. Now we can go and convert the world. And it's almost like, whoa there, thinking you can understand the deep mysteries of life and the universe. Mm. Woe to you, Homo sapien, with your view that you can understand perfectly who God is and what God is and how God operates. Let's just throw in the doctrine of the Trinity. Three in one. Ha, ha, ha. Three persons, one person. Get your head around that. How can it be two? Two things at the same time, as that earlier email said. So I sort of rather like that. I think we should celebrate Trinity Sunday because what we're celebrating is, listen, this thing is mystery. This thing is wonderful and awesome, but it is mystery. And the only really appropriate response for me is not reams of doctrine on the nature of the relationships between the Trinity, but a sense of wonder that somehow the universe is a wonderful place and God is. And we can trust in that. So that is kind of, I think, what the Trinity reminds me of. And I'm going to go with that for now.
Well, that's interesting because it's almost like a sort of Zen koan then in that. So I think that's, which is one of those sort of these things that statements that are sort of paradoxical, but are almost designed to keep you in a sort of uncertain state, to keep you in a sort of midpoint state between certainties. You can't be certain about it. If I knew anything more about it, I'd quote one, but I can't think one. Mm. But that, I think that's quite an interesting idea, because that actually makes it both mysterious but also quite useful in a way. It sounds awful to talk about the Trinity as being useful. Yeah. But one of the things we were grappling with was, if it's that mysterious, so mysterious I can't understand it, what's the point? How does that help me at all? How does that affect my life? But if you're saying, well, the mystery of it puts mystery at the centre, forces you to accept the presence of the mysterious, then I think that begins to, that's quite helpful, really. Mm. Yeah, interesting.
So there we go. We'll talk about this again next Trinity Sunday, I have no doubt.
Yes, if not before. We'll have it even more solved by
then.
Yes,
of course we will. Okay, moving on then. So we're going to do just a few emails about the last podcast now. And Becca said, I wanted to respond to two things from your last episode. Firstly, and this is an important point, the salt path. She said, I agree the film was a bit underwhelming. But she says, however, the book is beautiful. It is a wonderful, hope-filled story of resilience, love and humanity at its best. The two sequels are also brilliant reads, which I'd highly recommend. So for balance, read the books. Secondly, she says, as you were talking about how we might live in the light of the climate crisis, I couldn't help but think about gratitude. So my normal response when I know something good is coming to an end is to try and make the most of every last bit, whether it be a lovely meal, time with loved ones, holidays, theatre shows. I want to pay attention to all the goodness and really appreciate it. I think that is one way we can live hopefully, despite the really bleak state of things. Try to pay attention and appreciate and be thankful for all of the goodness around. Perhaps that is a bit like the faith part of the faith and action duo. The action is, of course, the things we can do to help care for our planet. Thanks to your show, I keep listening on the run around my local woods, she says. And that's from Becca. Becca, thank you. What a fabulous perspective that is. The right response to all this bad news of the world sort of coming to an end is, of course, one of gratitude.
Yes, I think that is good. I think gratitude, certainly, and recognition of what we have. I think that's probably part of the problem. Someone was asking me this week, you know, growing up, were we aware of the environmental crisis? And of course we were.
No.
We just took it for granted because we were still living in a world that hadn't actually sort of ruined itself, but it was on the way to it. And perhaps if we'd been more grateful for that at the time, we would have taken more action. I like the link there between the two things of both being grateful for what you've got, but also taking what action you can. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thank you, Becca, for that. And I really do agree with that. Let's respond to what's going on with gratitude. Okay, so moving on, Rob wrote in, and he wrote about how climate change is often argued with dry science and facts, and that's not really the right way to engage people. It needs to be a change of heart, really. We need to tell the emotional story as well. And then he finished with this. He said, it was astounding to hear how Tim had been treated by our so-called justice system, which now makes people too frightened to dissent on issues ranging from climate to Palestine. Tim was jailed, but the oil executives and their political lobbyists who have hindered climate action for decades continue to amass wealth. We struggle indeed against powers and principalities. Much love and cheese from Rob. Yeah,
I think that's true. And looking back, you know, we were saying to each other after the podcast, we didn't perhaps respond to that as well as we could in terms of the injustice of it. But that's partly because I think Tim spoke so calmly and graciously in a way about the experience. And I understand, I haven't read the book you have, but there's much more in there about his prison experience and what he discovered there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is appalling. You're absolutely right, Rob. Yeah. I mean, that the injustice of it, the ridiculous... I mean, apart from anything else, the stupid waste of time and resources.
I know. How many thousands did that cost the taxpayer? To put a 74-year-old vicar away?
To lock up somebody on a trumped-up charge, anyway, and then to actually sort of not... to deny them bail, as if they were some kind of public danger. Yeah. This is what happens when... you know, politicians, they're using it for something else. They're not reacting to it genuinely in terms of the threat level.
No.
They're using it in terms of all other kind of dissent. It's outrageous, yeah, you're
absolutely
right.
Absolutely. And actually, we had another email in from Vicky, who felt very strongly about that point and thought that I was not anything like sympathetic enough to Tim. She did say that she felt that I got the tone wrong, that I was a bit too jokey and laughy with him about his time in prison. And she felt very strongly about it. She said, "You were worried that the 17 would find the episode depressing. That's not the main emotion I have. I just don't think any of us are anywhere near angry enough yet." And then she finished off by quoting previous episodes, the interview with Ruth Valerio, episodes 136 and 89 are fab, she says. Anyway, thank you, Vicky. I take your points on board. I did find it actually quite a difficult episode, and we did have to do a lot of editing as well, which may not have helped the cause on this occasion. But all I can say is Tim was a lovely and gracious guest indeed, and I'm sorry if you felt I got the tone wrong. But in a funny way, I think I do want to talk about that.
I mean, I'd start by saying if I got angry with you every time you get the tone wrong, I mean, we'd never have a civil war.
Well, we wouldn't be in our golden years having had a lifelong relationship.
We would not be prioritising those quality times together. No,
exactly.
Would we?
But I do think Vicky is right in the sense that I am a bit uncomfortable around this issue, probably for the same issue as I am around money, e.g. like how much money should I give and how much should I keep for myself? Should I go on holiday or should I give the money to the poor? Should I fly or should I not fly? You know, there are some questions that make me wince a bit. And I think when it comes to climate responsibility, that's one of them. You know, I do know what the divine wants. I think that's clear. I think the divine wants me to live justly and fairly. I mean, that's a clear message from the Old Testament and New Testament. And I'm fairly clear about my personal mission, if I can put it that way. You know, like to be a good husband and to be a good dad, to be a good friend to people, to treat people with patience and kindness. And I think that's all fair enough. I think where I'm starting to feel a bit vulnerable is, but how do I deal with corrupt and unjust systems? You know, I am a part of Western capitalism, like it or not. And you know, maybe I should be a lot, maybe Vicky's right, maybe I should be a lot more angry at injustice than I am. But also, I don't like anger. A, because I'm a 7 and I try and avoid it. It's a difficult emotion. But B, I often don't enjoy spending time with angry people. They drain me. So, you know, I'm caught up in a slight funk around what is my responsibility to society, you know, to living justly and righteously in the world. I kind of know what that looks like for my family and in my sort of my kingdom, my sphere of influence, but I'm not sure what it means in terms of how much should I be protesting, what should I protest about, what are the key issues, how much of my time and money and energy should I be giving these things. And I feel vulnerable in that sense. Maybe that's why we need a church. We need one another to help with those bigger issues. And I don't go to church as such.
Yeah. For me, I think it comes down to values, individual values. I'd like to talk about this. Maybe I'll talk about it next week because I recently led a retreat bit and talked about our individual values. And most of us don't have our core values worked out.
Right.
In other words, you could be concerned about absolutely everything.
Yeah.
There is no limit to the problems of the world.
No. Nope.
And equally, there is no society that you could live in, Joe, where you would not be part of some kind of corrupt system. I don't, you know, like Western capitalism is not a great system. But it might be the least worst. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
When I look around the world, I'm not seeing anything that's a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, so you're always going to be having to live in that world and work it out. So I think it's about what are your values and how do you live them out and can you live them out to the best of your abilities to identify those. Because otherwise, what else can you do, really? You know, there's not much else you can do. You can only live out your values in your place and seek to follow Christ as best you can, really. I think the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about is caring. What does it mean to actually care about things? And justice is one of these things. You know, I was saying at the beginning about AI, one of the many reasons to loathe AI, from my point of view, is its environmental impact. Is that it's significant environmental impact for these data centers that have to power it.
Yeah.
And the data centers are set up to power AI because we can't be bothered to write an email. You know, we can't be bothered to look something up on Google or to, you know, to actually to pay attention to it. You know, I spent hours this morning trying to get a few paragraphs right in a book that probably no one will ever read. And then I get sent garbage that somebody has AI generated because they can't be asked to do that, put in the same effort. And so we've entered this kind of who cares era where we just don't care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter anymore. You know, like, I don't want to get overly political, but Trump, he lies the whole time.
Mm.
You know, he just lied. That's a fact. You know, I don't, your political views are your political views, but he is documented as like, and it's not just the fact that he lies. It's the fact that he doesn't care. And apparently the media doesn't care. Nobody cares anymore.
They're enjoying the show, yeah.
So what does AI do? Of course AI fabricates quotes from people. Of course it fabricates ideas. Of course it puts us in a golden senior relationship or whatever it did. You know, it doesn't care.
Yeah.
It has no ethics.
Mm.
And so our role is to care, I think, about things. Care about something.
Yeah.
You know, that you cannot care about everything.
No, you can't.
But care about something. You know, for you, make that patch of, okay, worship your lawn a bit, I would say. Make your patch of ground the most environmentally friendly you can make
it. Yeah, exactly. And it is sacred. And I do agree. And that's very helpful. Thank you.
And get angry. I agree with Vicky, actually. You know, like, we talked about anger before, haven't we? We've had this conversation about whether it's good or bad or whatever. But I think, you know, people don't understand why I get so irritated when they send me an AI-generated photo or a quote.
Yeah,
I get and it's a kind of sore spot with me, which I probably need to deal with. But it's because I write for a living. I put a lot of time into this.
Exactly.
I care about accuracy. I put a post up on my blog just today about a very good paper delivered by somebody about history in the age of AI and what it's going to mean. And of course, the danger is that AI will simply create false histories, you know, to justify whatever's going on. And it will create false stories. This paper was talking about how he's a historian, how he'd been sent bits with articles purportedly written by Martin Luther King and looking like they come from a newspaper, but actually dated after he died.
Oh, my goodness.
So they're just completely made up.
Yeah.
Now, if you give the control of history to people who don't care about it, and I think that actually a lot of the people in charge of AI literally do not care about history. They only see history as stopping them going towards their particular future.
Mm.
If you give control of history to them, they control the narrative. So you have to care. You have to work hard. You have to tend your garden, I think.
Mm.
Tend your patch and do whatever you can to keep that environmentally sustainable and also sort of accurate and clean and whole and truthful.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I think we've got to get into. I agree with you. I feel very vulnerable about it, but I don't know what else I can do except care to the limits of my ability about the area of my responsibility.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I agree with that. I think you did that very well. And I think what was genius about it is that you also managed to get in yet another rant about AI. Which is, you know, so well done.
I think it's not just about being grumpy, it's about weaponizing grumpiness and, in fact, monetizing it as well. That's the
key. We'd like to give to the podcast. Yeah.
Would you like to support more grumpiness? Send your money now. Yeah. Our chatbot is waiting to talk to you.
Yeah, exactly. No, it isn't. chatbot known as Joe Davis.
Can you imagine what a mid-faith crisis chatbot would be like? It'd be awful. It'd be just innuendo. It'd be dreadful.
Well, listen, I think that's a very fine point to pause. I think I probably need to finish this podcast with a Bible verse.
Is it about smiting people?
No, it's about rebuking you. No, it's
oh,
not.
Is it? Oh,
no,
good.
Of course it is. Oh, no, okay. No. Do you want to say anything before we do that?
Well, all I'd like to say is thank you very much for listening, obviously. Yes. And thank you to everyone who supports the podcast and allows me to vent in this way.
Is anyone still listening? Anyone?
I don't know. They're all out jogging in the woods, spotting butterflies, apparently. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Thanks to everybody who recommends the podcast. Thanks to everybody who writes in. We've had some great letters this week.
Yeah, we have.
That's really great. And if you wish to contact us, send your email to
joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. Oh, now, let me just say on that, we've been having a few issues with our emails. And me sending you emails and you not getting them. So if you think you've sent in an email that I haven't replied to, send another one. How will I know whether you've got the reply? I don't know how that's going to work. Now, that's an impractical suggestion.
Look, I think actually I've narrowed it down. I think some kind of spam filter is simply stopping you receiving emails from me. I think that's what it is. So I think actually in our senior years.
Yeah.
These golden years, they're not going particularly well, actually.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to finish with a word from one of the Old Testament prophets who says this, and I think this is as fresh and appropriate to me today as it is probably when the prophet said it in the first place. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. So to all the 17, let's try and do that this week, eh?